Hi everybody and welcome back to the Agility Rose Talk and Train podcast. So before we get started, I would like to thank our sponsors Nailer Agility for their support. If you haven't heard of Nailer before, they're the UK's leading tunnel providers. They have a product for everyone with complete customization when purchasing from them. You can choose between heavy and lightweight, agility or hoopers spec, and much more. Each tunnel is flexible, durable, and suitable for indoor and outdoor use. Nailer have just launched their new Non-Slip Plus tunnels, which is an excellent product for our dog safety. The new Non-Slip Plus agility tunnels are constructed using a new, highly textured material, and the inside of the tunnel has a heavy textured finish and offers significantly more grip. Nailer have very kindly sent me a new Non-Slip Plus tunnel to trial for myself, which will be put to the test by my dogs. If you're interested in hearing more or want to learn about how I'm finding their new tunnel, please feel free to contact me via Instagram at Agility Rose. And without further ado, let's get into this episode. Thanks, guys. Just to get into it, I kind of like to ask all my guests, I mean, I'd be very astounded if anyone didn't know you in the UK, but just for context, if they don't, could you give like a quick introduction as to who you are, who your dogs are, and what has been your favorite agility achievement to date,
if that's okay? Of course. If I forget any of the questions, let me know, because my memory is horrendous. So I am Dan Shaw. I compete in agility. I'm a member of Team GB now for a fair few years. So I've had what I would now describe as five agility dogs. Like, I hate describing them as that because they're my pets before anything else. Yeah. But I've had five dogs with the aim of doing agility with them. And four of them have made national teams. And my youngest dog is just two. So they've taken me to some really cool places. Was I meant to introduce my dogs?
Cool.
So I always introduce Hattie because she was my first dog. So sadly, she's no longer with me. She was my first dog. She was a golden retriever that got me absolutely obsessed with dog training and everything dogs. And they probably still hold my heart, the golden retrievers. I do look forward to having one again one day. Then I got Cody, who is now a nearly 15-year-old border collie.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a little legend. Like, he's still leading our walks for hours, like out the front, like literally, touch wood, he's problem free. We absolutely are so lucky with him. Then I have Ditto, who is a huge important part of my life, just because she taught me so much about dog training. Because she was a little bit more challenging. She's now going to be 13 in December. And she's just starting to look a little bit old and have like the beginnings of kidney problems and stuff. So she's so precious. Then I have Geek, who I think probably most people would know. He's probably the dog that I achieved the most with. So he's like a twice Crufts winner, twice GB medalist, just like the most special dog. And almost like human, like he can understand everything you say, even if you put it into a sentence. He's just an absolute genius. Next one was his daughter. So I bred him, I think he was about four. He only had one litter. I only ever wanted to really breed him to have a puppy myself. So he had one litter to Dave's dog Scarlet, and that produced Boffin. So I went into that litter wanting a red male and came away with a tri-bitch. She picked me at 5 weeks and she's absolutely mental. She has the most character of any dog I've ever met, and she keeps me on my toes. I love her. So she's on Team GB this year, so I'm really looking forward to the Worlds. And then my last addition is Little Nerd, who is like their cousin or their nephew or something like that, is related somehow. And he is just a completely different kettle of fish. Like, he's just the coolest guy around. He loves everyone. He loves everything. And he's just like, he is really up for agility, and I think he'll be quite fast. He's just so different to what I've had before. So yeah, I'm just enjoying having another dog teaching me new lessons.
Oh, incredible. That is amazing. And do you know what? I like how you touched on there with Boffin, how you have one dog in mind when you look at a litter, but you always end up with a complete opposite.
Yeah, I think that's literally happened in every litter that I've gone to, that I've picked the one that I wasn't going to get, like from the photos.
Oh, bless them. Incredible. So we have a lot of questions to get through, if you're happy to go through them. Yeah. I was inundated with people asking me things, and afterwards they were like, oh, have you got, can you add anything else? Have you done it yet? And I was like, no, it's so good. I can see. But yeah, so I've not even mentioned it yet, but anyone listening, I'm hoping they'll know what it is because it's in the title. But we're talking about young dogs today, which Yay. Is very exciting. So I've kind of categorized into different bits. So we'll go on the early mums first.
Yep.
So question one, what is the best foundation behavior to start teaching a puppy / young dog for agility?
Okay, so I think if I had to pick one trick that you're kind of doing in one of those first few weeks home, I'd be torn between hide and seek games, where like you throw a treat, the puppy goes out and gets it, and you run off and hide. Because I love like the fun element of training in that. It reminds me of like even having my first dog, Hattie, like the training was actually not intentional training. I was just playing with her and she was learning things at the same time. So maybe that, I like that for a relationship game. But for something more formal, I would pick nose touches because it has 1,001 uses. Like it can be such a handy recall trick. I use it for agility foundations. So they'd probably be my top two.
Incredible. I really like the hide and seek one. That's one I've never really heard around before.
I mean, I love it. And if you've got access to someone else, like you can bribe a family member or something, if you've got someone to hold the puppy and they can hold the puppy and you can run off and properly hide, it works even better. Plus, it's a great one for tiring the puppies out. So it ticks loads of boxes.
Oh, amazing. That is a great one. Brilliant. So question two. This person asks, my first dog was a Velcro puppy. How do I prevent the same happening again with my second dog?
Okay, cool. So it's always a tough one. You tend to either get the dogs that want to really be with you the whole time and not leave, which can obviously make some agility behaviours quite difficult. And you can also get the other extremes of the dogs, which are kind of almost always out herding away from you. So if I was to have to pick a type, I'd pick the more Velcro one because the issues are easier to fix. But you've just got to make sure you're not doing too much rewarding on your side, because the more you reward at you, the more the dog wants to be there. So you want to make sure maybe, let's say, for example, you were teaching the beginnings of a wing, rather than doing a wing and rewarding back with you, reward place in at the wing. So you start to put the value in for being away from you. Maybe dead toy exercises, like racing the dog to a dead toy, just so that reward isn't always with the handler and they can be rewarded for moving away from the handler.
Incredible. Yeah, no, that's definitely a great one, because you do see a lot of kind of dogs head checking towards people, and I've always heard about the dead toy situation with Velcro dogs. I think I need to try it with my own, actually.
Well, having a Velcro dog is really amazing if you are the world's fastest runner and you can literally just deliver your dog everywhere and make all the positions in record time. For most of us, that isn't the case. Our dog speed outweighs us, so we have to be able to teach those distance skills. And the more skills you teach, when you start teaching any skill, like the foundation stage of a threadle, I really quickly want to build up to seeing how far away I can do that from, so that I am teaching the dog that things can happen away from me pretty early on.
Amazing. No, I definitely agree. Question three. Following your online training program, how do you set your training sessions with young puppies in the beginning? So how long do they go on for? What would you recommend?
So most of my training sessions in those first few weeks are literally 2.5-3 minutes at a time. Really, really short, because I think something I'm quite renowned for in my puppy training is the energy. And it's very much about having a great time. And if you think about anything where you want something to be really amazing, there's only so long that feeling and that emotion and that happiness can last for. So I tried to make my sessions as short as possible, because realistically the puppy's brains aren't able to focus for too long. I would, however, caveat with that by saying that maybe with Nerd I didn't do enough long sessions, and then his focus wasn't always as long as it could have been as he started to grow up. So I'd say definitely start short, but then do start to lengthen them out as time goes on, so the dog is learning to focus for longer periods of time.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, no, I can see what you're saying there as well, with the kind of lengthening them as they get older.
Yeah, that's where I think I went wrong.
I've done that before, don't you worry. And that kind of nicely leads on to the next one, which is how many training sessions per week do you do with your young dogs between, say, the ages of 6 to 12 months, for example? This is
okay, so by the 6 to 12 months they're doing slightly different things to they do when they first bring them home. So they might be doing like puppy jump bumps, so like puppy grids, the beginnings of wing work, the beginnings of tunnel work. So the equipment sessions are certainly less frequent than the other stuff. But I might, with a 6-7 month old, aim to do a session a week on flat work games around a toy, a session a week on wing work, a session a week on maybe a puppy grid, definitely a couple of sessions a week on tricks, just in the lounge, teaching them to use its mind. So it might look something like that. So they might end up doing some learning almost every day, but that doesn't mean it will be agility learning every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I say, if they're managing smaller sessions, you can kind of, you know, if you're not doing like an hour sort of session in 100%. One day. Yeah.
100%. I think little and often is better than going out and drilling them for 2 hours.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And it's good with latent learning as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Early months covered. So next category we're looking at is agility foundations. So these are more specific to those kind of topics. So question one for this category, how would you boost a dog's confidence and speed during early agility training? So for context, this dog in particular is fast on walks, so appears to have more to give still in training.
Okay, cool. So the first thing is just to find what motivates that dog. So obviously some dogs are more complex than others. So in the perfect scenario, the puppy comes home and it loves toys and you're like, oh, this is amazing because I'm not going to do anything. So Nerd was that dog for me. Like, he came home and was just mad about toys. Like, they were his be all and end all. You could have held like a steak next to him and he'd be like, nope, I want the toy. So he was very easy in that aspect, but not all of mine have been. And then you've kind of got two routes that you can decide to go down. You can either go, right, I'm going to work with what my dog wants. And if that's something that is obviously easy to use in agility, go with it. Like, famous dog trainers like Susan Garrett were famously using the fly squat with their Jack Russell. Things like that are pretty easy to use in agility context, aren't they? But if your dog's reinforcer is, I don't know, jumping in a paddling pool, how realistic is that to do that at the end of every run at every show? Possibly not that realistic. So your second route to go down is to see if you can train or work with or do some transfer of value, whatever, to try and create your dog to be reinforced by something that is easy to reinforce them with. So if I link it back to Ditto, she didn't really like food and she didn't really like toys. So when everyone else was doing cool agility training, she was learning just to have a great time with toys. And by the end of teaching her that toys were amazing, of all of my dogs, she's probably the one that is the most obsessed with toys because it was something we invested so much time into. So I think a lot of people want to skip over the foundations of the foundations, and the foundation of the foundation are creating a reward structure and creating something that your dog loves.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I like what you said there about obviously with Ditto, how just going back to that has made it much stronger for you know, the rest of her career. So, you know, taking that a bit extra time sometimes is much better for the dog's, you know, potential.
100%. Yeah. I started with her. So she would tug on like massive teddy bears. And there were these certain ones that at the time they sold in Pets at Home and they were like super expensive and they would last for one training session, because her favorite thing would be to get the toy, do 1 second of tugging and then dissect the toy, like pluck it to pieces, which I would let her do because it was so reinforcing for her. So I had to kind of then start to wean her onto things that were more affordable and less breakable. But I did start off by just letting her have these teddies that she lived for and could kill.
I can imagine that's quite an expensive expensive habit.
Yeah, but it was one per weave session at one point. It was pretty expensive.
Oh, and this sort of leads on to the next question a little bit about what we talked about, taking a bit longer. Do you find more trainers seem to be pushing the dog, younger dogs, for more much sooner nowadays, or is it dog dependent, and should we all be taking a little bit more time?
It's a really hard question, and I think in the past I've been quite passionate about being very opinionated on one side of it. And now that I'm getting old, I try to see things a bit more from both sides. I often fail, but at least I try. So yes, if I had to answer the question honestly, I think yes, people are pushing their dogs for more younger. I think as a result of a couple of things. I think people are very keen to win.
Yeah,
maybe sometimes at the cost of their dog, possibly. And I think courses are getting harder, so people feel like they need to be training them younger. And I think a lot of the young dog courses are not grade appropriate, therefore people have to train their dogs more in order to get around the courses when their dogs are coming out. So yes, I think people are doing more with their dog. I like to think I couldn't be put in that category. Nerd made sure I couldn't be put in that category because he had 2 months out at 4 months with a grass seed in his foot, and another 2 months out at like 17, 18 months when he ate something and had a blockage. So I would say even now, we're not where most dogs are when they come out at 18 months, but none of my dogs ever have been. So I'm in quite a fortunate position where I've taken it slowly with all of my dogs and been rewarded at the end of it. I think a lot of people haven't experienced that. So they do feel the rush or the pressure of other people doing it.
And I like you said there, that, you know, sometimes giving them that extra time, you've reaped the benefits of it, and you know yourself. But yeah, it's good obviously to look from both sides. And yeah, I think there is sometimes that pressure there that, you know, we all want to kind of get higher up, and especially with like the kind of, you know, novice cup and different things that are there for the younger dogs. I think people are kind of pushing for the more high skills quite early on, aren't they? Yeah,
I would agree. I was the point I always try to tell people is, I think when Geek last won Crufts, the champ final, I think he was 8.5. So he wasn't a young dog. And I think the fact that he was still at the top of his game at 8.5 was as a result of not being pushed at a youngster. So the result at 8.5 means more to me than if he'd won that at 2.5, 3.5. So yeah.
It's just as equally a huge achievement at any age, isn't it? So, you know, yeah, regardless of how...
I'll take it at any age, to be honest.
Yeah, oh God, I think me too. Amazing. So, next question. Can you give a rough timeline of when you like to start different skills for your young dogs and what kind of follows in your online training? So, okay, for example, this person asked, when would you start training running contacts, maybe weaves? Kind of, what would you do following your online training program?
It's a really hard question to answer because I don't really start doing anything until I'm happy with how the relationship and the reward structure and the dog's body awareness looks. Mm-hmm. Once I'm happy with how all of these things are looking, and those are all of those games feature in, like, so my website's laid out in age sections. So as you go onto the website, you can click on like 8 to 10 weeks or 10 to 12 weeks and things like that. So I'd say, on those early sections, it's all very much just relationship and the dog learning how to learn with tricks and stuff. Once that's all happening, I might start the foundation for a threadle at 6 months, but the foundation for a threadle is doing a nose touch on my hand on their threadle command. Mm-hmm. So the behaviors might start young. Running contacts, the first session is the dog goes and touches the mat with its front foot and comes back towards me at a walking pace. Mm. That again, I might start at 6 months. So you could really shock people and be like, oh, I start threadles and my running dog walk at 6 months, but they're not at all looking like a threadle or a running dog walk. Does that make sense?
Oh God, yeah, 100%. I definitely see where you're coming from, because as you say, a hand touch is a lot less sort of on the body than what a threadle would be at full speed and on a wing. So yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying there, and it's good sort of sometimes to start those little kind of behaviours that will eventually amount to that, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a bit like I was saying with Nerd, every dog teaches you something. So I think Boffin taught me that you can leave some behaviours too late to teach. So I left her threadles, so threadle slices and backside slices, until she was probably, oh God, someone's probably going to tell me I'm wrong, but I'm going to say, like, I don't reckon she was 18 months before I started teaching them to her. And with her, where she's such a fast dog, like, she's the fastest dog I've ever had. She's so crazy and she does everything at a zillion miles an hour. She then was at manic speed at 18 months and she just didn't learn to do it ever slowly. So then she started to like do it at full speed and hit wings, which obviously isn't good for her body. Mm-hmm. So in hindsight with her, I would have started that a little bit younger. But I think, again, that's reading the dog in front of you and going with that.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah, 100%. I definitely agree. Kind of, especially like you say, in that context for her, just having that little bit earlier might have, you know, made a bit of a difference. But yeah, no, that's brilliant, that one. Thank you. So next question. What's your favourite method for teaching weaves and why?
Okay, cool. So I've experimented with my dogs with most weave methods. Again, as I answer with most questions, it depends on the dog.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick a specific method, I would go channels for teaching my dogs the 12 weaves, because I think you can, it's the most likely way of encouraging amazing footwork and really cool independence. But then I do three pole entries for their weave pole entry work.
Yeah.
With Nerd, I did 2x2, and with Boffin, I did 2x2. Now, with Boffin, 2x2 was the best method ever because obviously she thinks everything's crazy fun and she learns very quickly, and it was probably good for her to do a more thinking type of method. Mm-hmm. She has really, really amazing weaves. With Nerd, I did 2x2, and I think where thinking wasn't his forte, channels might have been a better option for him.
Oh, okay.
So I think with my next one, I'll go back to the channel and three pole method, and I just find it really fun as well. So I enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah, and sometimes that comes across, doesn't it, with the dogs as well. I'm a whole channel. I've never actually looked at 2x2, mostly because it scares me. I don't know how I would do it, but I'd have to look at your course to be able to practice it. But yeah, no, I think a mixture of the two, as you say, can be quite nice for them as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Question 5. So, young dog starting to scream whilst watching agility. Do you have any advice for this?
Yes. So, with the exception of Geek, who was born perfect, all of my dogs have at some point decided to scream and watch agility. I couldn't decide between Ditto, Boffin, and Nerd actually which one was the worst. They were absolutely feral for it. So the first thing is not letting the dogs practice that behavior. So when I used to take Nerd to his group foundation classes, I would take him into the building for his go, keep him in for the dog after. But when the dog after was working, I would be doing focus exercises on me. Mm-hmm. And then I would take him out and put him back in the car, because that would just firstly give him time to relax and chill out and come down a little bit. But it was also very unrealistic to ask a 7-month-old male puppy to remain focused on me for 2 hours. So I wanted to practice it, but in an achievable way. And then as that became easy, I was like, right, I wonder if I can keep him in for two dogs and he can remain quiet. And as that became easy, I started to up it and 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 ask him to do a little bit more. I think one of the most important things to teach the dog is to stay on a raised bed. Mm-hmm. If the dog can stay on a raised bed, then you can start to have some control around a lot of different scenarios. So I did quite a lot of work on that with Nerd. And now he's actually at a point where I could train two of my dogs, him and Boffin, at the same time, and he could stay on the bed while I train Boffin, which at one point I never thought I would have. So that's pretty cool that we managed to work through that.
That's amazing. And I'm always very envious when I see videos of I think I've seen some of yours before where you've got one on the bed and one's training, and I'm like, oh my god, I need to do more of that, because that would make my life so much easier.
I don't do a hell of a lot of it, because I really like that the training is my one-on-one time with that dog. Yeah. But you know, life is sometimes manic, so sometimes I'll have both of them out there at once.
No, it would make it much more convenient when you've got mm-hmm. very short for time. So yeah, I do exactly. like that idea. Awesome. So we're already on to the third category. You'll be glad to hear we're flying through these questions. So this one's about starting competing. So when we start to move into looking at competing with a young dog. And the yes. first one is, do you ever reach a point of knowing that your young dog is ready to compete, or is it something you just have to test and see?
That's a good question. I've been asked that quite a few times. So what I would say about that is there's probably never going to be a time where you go, oh, my dog can do everything in agility, it's ready to come out. But so the first question I would always ask people is, can you promise that your dog, as much as you can, that your dog will stay with you? Obviously dogs yeah. will be dogs, but could you assume that your dog is going to stay with you? Have you set your dog up to work alongside another group and it's happily staying with you? If yes, and it can complete the obstacles and it can go over the full height jumps and you're not having tons of weave failure in training, then put them in the ring. My dogs never come out as a finished product. They come out very much to gain ring experience. And as an example with Nerd, of all of the courses he's entered, I think we're at about a 50% running rate. So I walk them and then 50% of them are run, 50% of them are either deemed unsafe to run, or he yet doesn't have the skills. And that's mm-hmm. not the judge's fault at all. That's my training's fault. So I would say, if you're confident your dog's going to stay with you, you're confident your dog has the confidence to complete the kit, give it a go.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with what you're saying there. And I think it's so important, as you say, on the point that, can you guarantee as much as you can that dog's going to stay with you? Because I think sometimes you know, we see a lot of young dogs, well, maybe not even young dogs, sometimes you see older dogs, but running into other rings, and it can quite upset other competitors. And
I think it's a huge accident waiting to happen, like a dog going in one end of the tunnel as another one's going in the other. Like,
oh, God, yeah.
It really could be quite horrendous. So I would be fully for like what some of the European countries have, and I'll probably be shot for saying this in this country. Like, I'd be fully up for having like a temperament test or an obedience test before you go in. Like, can your dog hold a 10-second downstay off the lead when a dog goes over a jump? If it can, brilliant. Let's come and compete. It's not going to be a complex test. And behaviours like that are possible to teach. So I've had border collies with the strongest of chase drives, and it's been something that's been reasonably easy to train.
100%, because like I've seen just this weekend when I was judging, I had a nervous dog in the ring that was then kind of had a young dog run into the ring at the same time, and it didn't mean any harm and nothing it came to it, but you just don't know for that young dog's protection as well what could happen. So it's
it does make me nervous.
Oh God, yeah, me too. Heart in mouth moment every time it happens.
Me too.
Moving on then. So the next question we've got is, how do you manage finding a pre-run / queuing routine that works for your dog?
Okay, cool. So does this include the warm-up?
Yeah, this can include warm-up as well. Yep. Just in general, like what from getting from the car to the ring and inside the ring, basically.
Okay, cool. So my warm-up is quite extensive. So I have about a 10 to 15 minute lead walk, and then they have like a hands-on rub down over all of their body, which takes probably about 5 minutes. Then we'll work through a series of tricks, which is another 5 minutes so that they run around a little bit. So the warm-up is a minimum of 20 minutes, depending on how physically demanding the course is. Once they've got that, I'll then start to walk to the ring, and I'm so fortunate that kind of within my friendship group we tend to camp together and go to shows together, so we'll try to queue for each other. So you know, one person will go over and then I'll go over once there's maybe like four or five dogs to go, because I think often if the dogs are queuing for 15 or 20 dogs, by the time they get to the start line they're either knackered or they're so over threshold that you're not going to get much out of them. Then when I am queuing, I have a couple of things I don't do. I'm not stood there chatting to people. I will chat to people, but not when I've got my dog out. I need to focus on my dog. And I'll just be engaging with the dog, maybe asking for some tricks, maybe asking for some control behaviours, maybe doing a little bit more warm-up next to the ring. And then I'm ready to go into the ring. And my start line is pretty easy. My dogs start between my legs. I lead out. I count down from three. I release my dogs. And then by that point, I'm in the zone. And hopefully the dogs are.
And I like how you picked up on that. Obviously, you know, love to chat. But when you've got your dog out, it's so important to focus on them, because I think that can be quite forgotten about. And then obviously some dogs will maybe, like you say, become over threshold because they've had chances to probably watch. And I think that's really important, having that focus there on them. And having someone to queue is so helpful.
I think head collars are one of the worst things that happened in agility. And I use them with Boffin to get me from A to B if I think she's going to be over threshold. They're not my favourite tool, but I will use it. Because I think people just put their dogs on a head collar. They feel no pressure of the dog pulling. And then you've just got this queue of frenzied animals. So I try not to let my dogs get into that frenzied state. I try to keep them a little bit calmer.
Yeah, and it's so helpful for when they're in the ring as well. I mean, you're going to get more
100%. 100%, yeah.
Amazing. And that kind of touches on this next question, which is, what qualities of a show would you look for when entering their first competitions? For example, the dilemma of maybe you've got judges that you know you prefer their style of courses, but they're more at bigger champ shows, or you've got maybe a quieter, more local show, but maybe you don't know the judges, so you don't know what kind of courses you're going to get set.
So there's really just two things I look at. The first one is the equipment.
Yeah.
Now this year, to me, this has been learned as an even bigger lesson. Because I think on the whole now, especially down here, we're very spoiled. Having a lot of the Gallican equipment. I think Nerd's only done one show on an equipment supply that I'm not so keen on. And I had a really bad slip on the tunnel. So my view now is, if the equipment isn't up to my scratch, I won't do it. So I've got two equipment suppliers that are at the top of my list. I've got one that is an acceptable equipment supplier, but I'll definitely only go if the judge is good. And then I've got one equipment supplier now that I won't go to. And my second most important factor is the judges. Sadly, we know that some judges are going to set things that are completely inappropriate for young dogs. And with the size and potentially the speed of my dogs, the distances I'm very interested in. So if they're setting minimum distances, I'm just not going to enter under those judges. And I'd rather wait and let my dog's first ring experience be a good one, really.
Yeah. And like I say, you know, especially if we're kind of, we never bring the dogs out knowing everything, it's important to protect that because, you know, body wise, I mean, you hope that they've got that there, but we're kind of their biggest advocates at the end of the day. So yeah, no, 100% agree with you there. Next question, which is quite an interesting one. How strict are you with your dog's criteria when they first debut, and how much is it dog dependent?
That's a really good question. So there's a couple of things. The first thing that I'm always strict on the criteria of is start lines. So I would really, if the dog was to move on the start line before, I would run back and reset and then go again, because the losing of a start line can happen after one. And I learned that the hard way with Cody. So I'm very strict on the criteria of start lines. Things like let's take running contacts, for example.
Yeah.
This is a much harder criteria to know what to do with. So you go into the first ring in training, your dog's been getting the running dog walk quite nicely. You go to the first competition and they hit not within the criteria zone. What do you do? Well, if the hit was higher, higher than I know the dog can do, but the striding was quite nice and they weren't leaping, it was just a higher hit, I would personally keep going for those first few competitions. If the dog was to leap the dog walk and it's just lost its mind or it's not thinking or whatever, then I would send my dog from their good spots. I really like my dogs to be able to do a down plank really nicely, because it means I can quickly correct in the ring without annoying the judge, without annoying anyone, and just keep things a bit more fun for the dog as well. So if it was completely out of criteria, I would do a down plank. However, again, the asterisk on that would be, can that specific dog cope with it? So I have students' dogs where I'd say, whatever happens, keep going and we'll fix the training and problem. We'll fix the problem in training, because the environment enough is stressful for your dog and we don't want to add anything to it. We just need the dog to stay with you, basically.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess you can kind of, depending on the dog, you can sort of go the other way where you knock the confidence 100%. By correcting too much. Yeah,
100%. And the word correct is an interesting one. Of course, we all correct our dogs, but the correction can still remain fun. So there's another great thing about nose touches. Say your dog pops out at pole 10, call them into a nose touch. The dog remains completely focused on you and then whiz them through the weaves with just as much energy as you did before. So corrections for young dogs, I believe especially, should be fun and lighthearted.
Yeah, and I guess you've sometimes got as well from the handler perspective those nerves. So I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Sometimes people maybe are under a bit of pressure. You know, you don't know who's watching, and you kind of forget that, don't you? Whereas, like, if you go into it, the mindset, you know, I need to correct something, I'm going to make it super fun, and in how I would handle it in training, I think that's really important to kind of remember.
I always say that my most nerve-wracking runs are my first few shows with my young dogs. Like, I'm more likely to pee my pants on the first few shows than I am standing on the start line at the World Championships, because I feel firstly like, oh my God, I've got no idea what this dog's going to do. Yeah. You haven't got that history of the dog being good in the ring or whatever to reinforce you. And also I feel like my dogs are watched maybe a little bit, especially Nerd, where I've had the Nerd and Boffin have both been brought out after following their puppy diaries. I feel like there's a few eyes on them, and it almost feels like shows sometimes go deadly silent and everyone's looking. They're probably not. They are probably having a lovely time chatting about their own day, which is what most people are doing. But it just feels highly pressured. But by the time you get halfway around, you're normally in the zone, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. Do you know what? That actually reminded me. I think I judged you with Nerd at Nottingham.
Yeah.
I remember all the ring, there was people watching it. It went really quiet, but he was just fantastic.
So that does happen then. I was thinking in my head, I was like, is this just something that my nerves make happen young dogs?
I think it's more people are in awe when they're watching. I think they're like, oh my God, look how incredible this dog is.
Oh,
and this
so
partnership.
Kind.
So I think that's more what it is than the odds.
We've certainly had many runs we've come out where it's not felt incredible, but like I say, that's young dogs, that can happen.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, I really like what you touched on there about it being your most nerve-wracking, because I've had a couple of young dogs come out this last few years, and oh my God, I literally I the nerve before you bring them out, because you've just got no idea what to expect.
Yeah, I fully agree. But for me, and I think probably for most people, if they were to really think about it, nerves are so important. Like, I perform so much better when I'm nervous. I know that if I'm nervous, I'm going to be way more focused. And my best results have always come after being nervous.
Yeah, 100%. You've got to work the nerves to your own advantage, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%.
Incredible. So, next question. When competing with a young dog, do you find you focus more on their runs compared to your older dogs, qualifiers and champs? And how do you split yourself when bringing out a young dog while still competing with others at maybe a higher level?
It's a good question. So I try not to have too many competing dogs at the same time, just because I think it's physically and mentally hard to have a lot, for me anyway. So what I like to have is this is how I try to plan my dog planning. Does not always work out. I try to plan it that my young dog will come out when the older dog is an established grade 7 dog, which did happen perfectly for Nerd. Boffin was pretty sure she was an agility champion by the time he came out.
Oh, wow.
So I had her to focus on, really. And because I don't want to be putting pressure on my young dogs. I want them to come out and they're kind of what I'm playing with, and the older dogs are what I'm focusing on. Of course I'm focused on the young dogs, but it's just in a very different way. But frustratingly with Boffin this year, in March, so she did amazing in the tryout. She got the win on spot for GB, which was beyond my wildest dreams. That was amazing. But during the process, I thought she'd scuffed her pad. Well, she had scuffed her pad, but she'd also picked up this toe injury, and it just was refusing to budge. So basically she ended up being out for 3 months, which meant I don't want to say just had Nerd, that sounds wrong, but I did just have Nerd to compete with. And I actually hated that for me and for him, because I'm not expecting my young dogs to come out and do well. And that's absolutely fine when you've got an established dog, but it was really, I found it quite tough for me having just a young dog when I was only running 50% of the courses.
Yeah, 100%, because you, like I say, you kind of doing all that traveling and preparing to get to shows, and then obviously you might be in the ring for just a minute the whole weekend. Yeah.
And it was one of the first times in agility. Normally I'm very much like, I'm here, I'm focused, where I was like, well, my friends are out having, a really good day, and I've only had a minute of a good day. And obviously it was just a passing thing, because we can't be expected to be at the top of our excitement level about the sport all the time. We're allowed to have peaks and troughs, and it was just one of those little troughs where I was like, okay, I need Boffin back now. And as soon as she was back, it took a hell of a lot of the pressure that I didn't even want to be putting on Nerd off of maybe myself and Nerd. And yes, it's been way better since I've got both of them.
Oh, bless. And I think that's quite a relatable thing as well, because I mean, I've been through it myself as well with dogs, and it's we do it unconsciously sometimes, that little bit of pressure there without even realizing and not meaning to. But as you say, it's one of the part and parcels of agility, isn't it? You always go through those dips and
100% 100%. And that's one of Nerd's positives as well, is that he's such a normal dog. He's just like, whatever, like, I don't care, do whatever. Like, he just doesn't care. So in that aspect, he's a really, really special dog, I think.
Oh, bless him. That is so cute. So this next question, I think this one's a really good one as well. Sort of on that, mental kind of train. How do I not compare my puppy's journey to littermates or other dogs their age?
Yeah, it's a really good one. I think the key thing to remember is, as long as you're having fun, really, does anything else matter? So with almost all of the litters that I've brought my dogs out in, I would say mine have come out the most green, possibly. Or at least they've had one litter mate, whereas a little bit has come out, flying through the grades. I think just know that your journey is going to work. Are you having fun? What is there to gain from doing things too quickly? Again, with Nerd, it was a little bit difficult because he had that 4 months worth of forced rest. He was particularly behind. And I was seeing dogs younger than him. I do believe at whatever rate you take it, whether you finish the first bit or you take your time, the end part will always be the same.
Yeah, 100%. And I like what you say about, sometimes they come out more green than others. But in actual fact, what are you gaining from getting that you know, getting through that quickly, because, you know, hopefully our dogs will have lovely long careers, and you might have 8 years of competing with that dog.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of having, when you put it into like that kind of perspective, you've got all the time, you know, you've got 8 years worth of time to kind of go through all these experiences with them, haven't you?
Yeah, I think that the other thing that is good is on social media, you've got the hide button. So
yeah.
If you've got someone that, you know, has a dog similar age to you, and you think, oh my God, they're doing so much, and it's making you question your training or your morals of training, just hide them, because then you've not got to compare yourself, and then life's much easier.
100%. Although I think I'd be hiding a lot of my friends, but that, I think that's mostly because I don't do enough sometimes. But yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And also, sometimes you only see a highlight reel as well on social media, don't
absolutely.
You?
So absolutely.
Just remembering that.
I mean, none of us really go on and post our worst sessions, do we?
Oh, God,
so
no.
That's the other good thing about my website, is I think when you log on, you'll see that not everything was plain sailing, and that I did have to work through some challenges as well, which I think is nice for people to see.
Oh God, yeah, because I mean, I imagine in your position and your experience, you get a lot of people probably presuming it's all plain sailing and never hit a road bump. So seeing that in actually on your online content must be so kind of relieving for people.
Yeah, I hope so.
Amazing. So last question on competing with a young dog. We've also kind of touched on this already. We see dogs running out of rings more at shows these days. Do you have any advice for people who might be struggling with this or are worried that their dog might potentially do this?
So the first thing is, it links back to what I was saying at the beginning. It's all about that relationship. It's all about creating an amazing recall. And then teaching your dog how to behave in that environment. So if you're learning in your garden with no other dogs around, by taking them to a show, that's a pretty big step up. Mm-hmm. So what I like, for example, about the puppy camps that we hold here, and this isn't a sales plug because they're all full. but what I like about the puppy camps we hold here is you've got two groups working alongside each other, but there's a fence in between them. So you start to see that at that dog's first puppy camp at, say, 7 months, did it go to the fence to chase? If so, now is the time to forget about any agility training and invest completely on teaching your dog how to stay with you off-lead with distractions around. So I would suggest going to some environments where there is another group working alongside, or at least aiming to build up to that would be really good.
That is, yeah, 100%. And I like how you mentioned, as soon as it's highlighted, that's when you need to look at it, because sometimes people can kind of go, oh, I'll deal with this down the line, and I'm more kind of bothered about the agility. But the sooner you kind of nip it in the bud, essentially, the quicker it's
And people seem to get really embarrassed by it, which I can understand. Mm-hmm. But Boffin, who is now obviously an amazing dog, her first puppy camp, she went to the fence. She wanted to chase the dog next door. Like, dogs are dogs. And when these things come up, we just have to train them rather than sulking or crying that they weren't perfect.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, my first agility dog, God, she was terrible. She wouldn't run out the ring to other dogs, but she'd run out to find my parents. And she'd training, she'd run around, and she'd... Well, this was when she first started, but she'd be the one causing the chaos, and we'd have to round her into a pen to try and catch her again. And she ended up being, you know, getting to grade six before I lost her. But so it's like, it's not as if you can't achieve anything with dogs like that.
It just means you might have to just put the agility on the back burner for a month.
Yeah,
and focus on that.
100%. Awesome. So this next category, we've obviously spoke a little bit about Agility Geek already, but to give it a bit of an introduction, we've got quite a few questions about your online training.
Amazing.
So I don't know if you want to give it a bit of an intro first or anything.
Of course, yeah. So my aim was really simple. So I think my passion is very much the foundation of young dog training. I wanted to create almost like a site where you could go on, you could be like, right, my puppy is 9 weeks. And I'm not sure what to do with it. So you click on that section and it just comes up with like 20 video lessons. You go, oh, that one sounds fun. I'm going to click on that one. The videos are super short. They're like, especially in the early stages, 2 to 5, as the dog's progress in age, they do become a bit longer, but they are something you can really quickly watch and then go out and train. And all of this process could be done in 15 minutes. And it's just something you feel is hopefully going to be beneficial, rather than, can't think of anything, I'm going to do sit weights again, or I'm going to do my lefts and rights again, or whatever.
Do you know what? You covered one of the first questions as well in that, which is brilliant, which was about the benefits of online training. As you say, it's so easy and accessible as well for you to look back on and revisit. And this person also asks, you know, kind of, is, are there any, obviously, if you can think of any more benefits to online training, and is it something that you would incorporate when you're training your own dogs as well?
Yes. So something that's massively noticeable, and it's when I do spend at least a minimum 3 days a week kind of traveling the country doing training days, and I can almost instantly pick people that have done my online course.
Oh wow.
Almost instantly. And I'm awful with names, horrendous with names. So it's not like I go, oh yeah, I recognize that name. It's just something I see that they're doing with their dog. It will be that the dog's got a certain behavior, hopefully a good one, that I think, have you done my course? And they'll normally say yes. And if they don't, they'll say, no, I've done your friend's course or whatever. And I'm like, okay, brilliant. They're all, I'm sure, very similar. So I can see these things very quickly. So I have a huge belief on online training, because one-to-one training and group seminars are great, but they give you a 2-hour training, and I'll always give people homework to go away and work on those. But these online training sites give you every single bit that you possibly need. Like, there's not something that I've kept for myself as a secret to hide to make my dog. Like, there's every single thing I do with my dogs out there, so that hopefully everyone can have the same foundation. And the results I see are amazing. So the OGs, I call them, of the Agility Geek series. I had a couple of people that I guinea pigged it on before releasing. So one of them is a student I've got with a spaniel. She's flown up to grade 7. She's won Crufts singles qualifiers with this dog. Wow. Who's just turned 3. And then I've got students with their border collies flying up the grades. They're aiming for international teams next year. And these are people that most, if not all, of their access to training was online.
Wow. And that is just incredible, especially the results that they're gaining already from it and at the age. And I like, you know, how you obviously mentioned how accessible it is, but also how, you know, in that one-to-one or a group session, you're not going to get as much time as you would with all this online content. I mean, it'd be impossible to cover everything in a one-to-one, wouldn't it? So
yeah, 100%. The one downside of online training is it can be non-specific to that person and dog. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my questions start with, well, it depends on the dog. So for that very reason, I created the members page on Facebook. So we have all of our members on there, and I try to do a live a minimum of once a month, but they can ask questions every day if they wanted to. They could post videos every day if they wanted to for feedback. And that for me is so important, because I think if we didn't have that, people would just be training their dog how I'm training Nerd. Whereas with the help of the members page, I can go, oh, but for your dog, you could tweak it by just doing this, which is really, really important.
And you don't even have to have the petrol to travel either.
No,
to get
exactly.
Your ecstasy.
You can do all of it just from being warm and cozy on the sofa.
Oh God, it's just the dream, isn't it? Because as you say, especially for people who maybe, you know, might be the Highlands of Scotland, you're just not going to be able to access your expertise all the time unless there was the online training, which is just how useful it is. Amazing.
Yeah, the distance thing is amazing. So I taught in Australia in January.
Yeah.
And I had groups of people that were doing my online training, and it was just so cool to see again the results from someone the other side of the world that had been following it.
Wow, an international, that is incredible. Amazing. So next question, what would you suggest is the best way for your members to make the most of Agility Geek? So in terms of, it could be how they set their training sessions up, what they follow, how would you suggest is the best way for them to make the most of it?
I would say this is again a bit of a cheesy answer, but the best way to do it for their dog is to follow it at their own rate.
Yeah.
So people will often message me like, I'm really behind, my dog's 3 months, but I'm still on the 10-week section. I'm like, oh well, have you enjoyed it? Is the dog making progress? If so, brilliant. Do it at your own pace. Your pace might be quicker than mine. You might be flying through the stages quicker. As long as it's not bad for the dog's body, go for it. But just do it at a pace that suits you and your dog, and don't feel like the worst thing people can do is go, I have to train my dog every day, and they go out and train it when they're not in the mood to. I only ever train my dogs when I'm in the mood to train them.
That is a really good point there. And dogs are so good at picking up on our moods and everything. I mean, I have very sensitive spaniels, and you can spoil a behavior in one session by doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're in a mood, go for a walk.
Yeah, yeah. Take a walk. Don't take the dog with you though, because you. Or maybe take the dog, but let them have a loose free run or something without having to be in close proximity.
Yeah.
But brilliant. So this next question is really interesting, and I think this would be quite good. Can I use Agility Geek if I don't have a garden?
Yes.
Yep. So especially in the early stages, most of it's in the kitchen, and then. As you progress through, you might need a wing, but you could or a cone or something, but you could take that to a park or a bit of grass. And then as the months do go on later and later, if you wanted to stay for this long, then obviously you're going to need a degree of equipment by the time the dog's maybe a year or something like that. So then maybe not, but in the puppy stages, absolutely. You could do it all without a garden, just in the lounge.
Amazing. I guess as well, once it gets to the equipment stage, you could potentially look at ring hire or things like that as well to kind of get
sessions people in. People are crazy inventive. Like, I've had online students where there's a bit of grass at the front of their house and they've gone out there and they've made a jump and they're out there doing it themselves. And like, I find that inspiring. So inspiring, where there could have been an excuse, but instead they've created a solution. And I find that amazing.
Oh god, yeah, there's always a solution for something. I know. I used to use trees and sending them around that like a wing wrap and all sorts in my early days before I had equipment.
So yeah, me too.
Always something else you can use. Awesome. So this next question, I think it's our last question actually.
Cool. Flame through.
And it's a nice one to finish on, I think. What's one thing you've learned from each of your dogs as puppies that has shaped Agility Geek to what it is today?
Oh, that's a great question. I love talking about my dogs. So if we start with Hattie, who I'm looking at a picture of her now, my wall, she's beautiful. Hers was very much just that I have always wanted my relationships to be the same as what I had with Hattie, irrelevant of the fact that these dogs have that title of agility dog as well. I didn't want that to become above the fact that they were my family members, they were my pets. So all of my training, I hope, always has the dogs' well-being and enjoyment at the very, very core of it. So that probably was learned through my relationship with Hattie. From Cody, I would say the consistent part of my dog training. So the fact that I do stick to criteria, that there has to be rules. That doesn't mean that they're implied in a bad way, but there has to be some rules that we follow, I expect the dogs to stick to. And I would say Cody also is a big factor in my independent skill training that I do, because Cody was very much, he was my first agility dog, so he's very much delivered by me to the obstacles in the early stages. Next dog, who did we go to next? Ditto. every single session, person, video that I teach will be influenced by Ditto, because before Ditto, I'd been incredibly blessed by two dogs that they were like the lassies of the dog world. Like they wanted to learn. They thought I was amazing even when I wasn't. Like those dogs that you read about. Ditto wasn't that. So Ditto taught me probably that those relationship stages, the ones that I've been talking about in the early stage of the videos, the most important stage, that came from Ditto, because if I'm being completely honest, we had to learn to create a relationship, and now it's as strong, if not as strong, stronger than my others. But we had to learn how to kind of love each other, and that came through the relationship games. Then Geeky. Okay, Geeky taught me to be the best competitor that I can be, because he took me to crazy places, and I basically had to up my game to be as good as him. so in terms of dog training, he didn't teach me masses, because he was very, very easy, but he taught me to love everything. And that's a lie. He taught me, in the wrong hands, he would have been very sensitive. So he taught me that you have to inject fun into everything, even the potentially boring games. So even the way I teach a start line is different to most people. And that's maybe down to Geek, because I keep that as a really fun game as well. Then we have Boffin. Okay, so Boffin... she helps me teach all the wild dogs that I teach.
Yeah.
And in terms of the sight, again, almost all of my skill training. Boffin came around when agility was becoming much more technical and hard with these skills. Mm-hmm. So me and her learned a lot of that together. So I guess the skill part comes a lot from her. And Nerd, everything, because he features in 98% of the videos.
Oh.
So he taught me everything. And in terms of myself as a trainer, he's probably taught me... definitely patience,
because bless his heart, he just learns at a slower rate than the others. Once he's got it, he's got it, and he seems to have it just as good as them. But he definitely learns at a slower rate, and he's taught me not to find that too stressful. I mean, there was moments when I was like, oh my God, am I ever going to teach him to weave? But hey, he weaves now, so we're good. So yeah, he's in all of the videos. Yeah, bless them. And they just, away from agility, they've taught me ridiculous life lessons. I just feel so lucky to have them.
Oh, do you know what? It comes across so heartwarming how much of an impact you can just tell when you talk about your Ollie, how much impact they've had.
I love them. If I could pick my day, it would just be walking them all day and talking about them.
Wouldn't that be the dream? Oh,
yeah, I could just do a walk every day and then do a podcast talking about my day. I'd have the perfect day.
Oh yeah, definitely. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Dan, for all your time.
You're more than welcome.
I will leave, for anyone interested in looking into Agility Geek and joining, I will leave a link in the show notes so people can have a look at that and sign up. I'm already thinking, God, I need to go sign up straight away. I'll leave that in the show notes for people who are interested. But yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.